Going to London now for a look ahead to the world news with Rich Preston from the BBC. Morning, Rich.
Hello, good evening to you. Fascinating conversation that was, you were just having with that chap. You know, I live just up the road from a place called Kensal Green Cemetery, and it's where Freddie Mercury was created. Isambard Kingdom Brunel is buried there. Charles Babbage is buried there. Harold Pinter, Charles Blondin. It's just a who's who of famous people, and loads of people go and do tours of my local cemetery, and I never knew they were called taffophiles.
Taffophiles, yes. Have you been through yourself?
Yeah, I've gone for little wanders, but it's huge, it's sprawling place. And I've never been able to actually find any of those famous gravestones.
They're such beautiful places, aren't they? I know the one you're talking about, and things are overgrown and wild and pushed over and neglected, but it has such a charm.
Yeah, and in, you know, busy London as well, just quiet and peaceful,
yeah,
you know, as soon
peaceful.
As you step off the main road. Yeah.
All right, let's get to things that aren't quite so peaceful. Well, perhaps it will be. People in Kenya go to the polls tomorrow to vote in presidential elections. Who's running there and what's at stake?
Well, polls open at 6 o'clock local time tomorrow morning. That's 3 in the afternoon your time in 290 constituencies across the country. And that includes, obviously, urban sprawls like Nairobi and Mombasa, right the way through to the rural highlands. Now, this matters because Kenya is one of Africa's biggest economies, but it's also one of the most influential democracies in Africa, really up there along with Nigeria and South Africa. And in East Africa particularly, it's kind of a beacon of hope because Kenya is surrounded by Somalia, Ethiopia, Tanzania, Uganda, which all have various ongoing issues at the moment. So Kenya, really the most influential country in East Africa. There are four candidates in the running, but only two clear front runners, really, William Ruto and Raila Odinga. Now, William Ruto is the current deputy president. Raila Odinga is the current main opposition leader. The guy who's leaving office is Uhuru Kenyatta. He's been there since 2013. Various scandals, including at one point facing indictment by the International Criminal Court on charges of crimes against humanity, charges he denied. They were later dropped. But the reason I mention Uhuru Kenyatta is because you would think he would give his backing to his current deputy, William Ruto. But he's not. He's backing his opponent, Raila Odinga. This is huge, Karen. This would be like Donald Trump coming out and telling his supporters to vote for Hillary Clinton. It really is that massive. So why has he done this? Well, it depends who you talk to, because his deputy, William Ruto, would say this is about political dynasties and keeping a grip on power amongst the select few. And that's because President Kenyatta is the son of Kenya's first ever president and part of a political dynasty. Raila Odinga, the same. He comes from one of Kenya's richest families and one of the largest political dynasties. So William Ruto says this is about consolidating power amongst a select few and that ordinary Kenyans will suffer as a result. It's seen angry scenes, allegations being thrown backwards and forwards. But his main angle is that he's for ordinary Kenyans, the poor, the rural, and the young. Unemployment amongst the young in Kenya is massive. It's 40%, according to official figures. He also says he will appoint a gender-balanced cabinet, which is a big deal because more than half of voters in Kenya are women. Raila Odinga, he is playing the experience card. He's been an opposition leader for the past few years. He's playing on his decades of experience in politics, says he'll boost manufacturing and industry to create jobs. But this experience he's playing on might work against him. He's 77 years old, and this is his fifth attempt at going after the presidency. And as I mentioned, he's seen as being part of this old political elite. And as we've seen elsewhere in the world, sometimes people want to break away from that. Donald Trump is a prime example, you know, get power away from the Clintons and the Bushes. And so William Ruto says, you know, we need to keep power away from the Kenyattas and the Odingas, vote for me. And opinion polls do suggest William Ruto will win a majority of the votes. But the question is, will he win more than 50%? Because as I say, there are four people officially in the running. And if one candidate doesn't win more than 50%, it goes to a runoff vote.
Let's go to the region of China, Taiwan, and then the US. They're going to dominate in the week ahead. What are you watching out for?
Yeah, this story is not going away anytime soon, Karen. Let's begin with this military activity, which Beijing started last week in response to the US House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visiting Taiwan. Several days of unprecedented drills, which were due to end yesterday. And guess what? They haven't. They're continuing to this day as we speak. China says it's entirely within its right to do this. Taiwan is its territory, after all, in Beijing's opinion, and that it's acting within international law. But obviously, it's causing concern for several reasons. It's this antagonistic behavior towards Taiwan, and it's bringing various other countries in the region into the fray as well. Of course, Japan, South Korea, the Philippines, really unnerved by this sharp uptick of Chinese military activity in the region. And what's particularly important to highlight is how quickly they started. Within just a day or so's notice, Beijing had mustered hundreds of troops, ships, planes, artillery in the area around the Taiwan Strait, which is a huge commercial shipping lane. Then, of course, there's the diplomatic front, because China said it would pull back on various diplomatic fronts from the US. And ultimately, we're talking about the world's two most powerful countries here. Ideological differences aside, these countries need to be able to talk, otherwise it's stalemate for the whole world. One of the issues they said they weren't going to talk to each other on was climate. Beijing said it would no longer negotiate with Washington on issues to do with climate change. Global trade is another one. International development is another one. China angry at America, but of course America unlikely to back down or apologize either. The US has accused Beijing of being irresponsible when it comes to its military activity and its diplomatic standoff. Now, the reason that matters for the rest of the world is because of computer chips. Most of the world's technology is powered by computer chips made in Taiwan. And if this military activity around Taiwan continues in this commercial shipping lane, it might interfere with Taiwan getting its biggest export out of the country, which further down the line might impact on our cars, phones, computers, tablets, and so on. Now, the other thing to watch out for is what it's doing to people in Taiwan. It used to be the case years ago that people in Taiwan, many of them would say they were split heritage. They would identify as being both Taiwanese and also Chinese. But that's changing. Fewer and fewer people in the country are recognizing their Chinese roots, and more people are saying they are just Taiwanese. So as we saw with China's activity in Hong Kong a couple of years ago, it's really changing the dynamic in Taiwan and how people there see their neighbour over the Taiwan Strait.
And finally, Rich, this sounds promising. Flowers galore in Belgium on Friday. What's happening there?
I thought it'd be nice to end on something positive today after yes. all that grim news. This is called the Brussels flower carpet. It normally happens every 2 years. Guess what? It hasn't happened for the last couple of years. So lots of celebrations about its return. This is its 50th year, and it's an incredible sight, Karen. More than 1,600 square metres of the Grand Place in the centre of Brussels, completely covered in begonias, dahlias, chrysanthemums in particular, and along with different grasses and barks, volunteers get together to put this artwork together made entirely out of flowers. They make it in under 6 hours. And it's just remarkable to see. This year's theme is a callback to the first ever carpet in 1971, which was known as the Arabesque carpet. So beautiful Arabic patterns and Middle Eastern designs laid out on the Grand Place. And it will stay there for 4 days. And of course, this being 2022, it is highly Instagrammable. So come Friday, open up your social media and search for the Brussels flower carpet. And hopefully that will put a smile on your face.
It will indeed. I can't wait to see it. Thank you very much, Rich.
Thank you, Karen.
Okay, that's Rich Preston from BBC World.